Welcome to the Near Post Local. I'm Peter Funnell, where too much football is a ridiculous suggestion and not one supported by scientific research. Tonight we have news from the Men's Premier League Southern Death semi-finals. We'll do a wrap on the Women's Premier League, preview the major and minor semi-finals, which begin next Sunday as well. Tonight we have a terrific interview with George Hoitker, the Director of Co-Curricular at Radford College. Affectionately known as H by many thousands of young Australians that have attended Radford, this is his second interview for the Near Post Local. He talks at length on his experiences in junior football and the things you parents might like to consider before you launch your son or daughter at elite football. This bloke is the Dumbledore of football in the ACT. I'm dedicating this program to the young ladies that form the Woden Valley Women's Premier League team. What a terrific bunch of players, and they play in such great style. A terrific season. All conquering, no one tipped their success, which makes it all the more sweet. They are well coached, well supported, they are the real deal. A first-rate club football team. It just doesn't get any better than that. Now to the Men's Premier League. It was an astonishing Sunday of football, beginning with a cracking good Premier League 16 game between Canberra FC and Belconnen United. Canberra FC probably had the lion's share of territory and chances, but couldn't finish Belconnen off. It was end-to-end stuff, wonderful football. The game went to extra time, but penalty shootout written all over it. And it was a penalty shootout that was pure football theatre, edge-of-the-seat stuff. Again, Canberra FC took a two-goal advantage, which in the ordinary scheme of things would definitely mean victory. But their chances were thwarted by the Belconnen goalkeeper, who pulled off astonishing saves and dragged his team back from the edge of the abyss. It went to 11 or 12 shots each before the Belconnen goalkeeper made that one decisive save to secure victory for Belconnen United and progression to the grand final. Well done. My commiserations to Canberra FC. You played terrific football. The Pathways was a sensational game between Tuggeranong and Belconnen, the defending premiers. Belco just could not break down Tuggies, with Tuggies getting stronger as the game closed on full time. Then it happened. Tuggies got the goal. The game ended in an astonishing last-ditch, frantic piece of defending by Tuggeranong as Belconnen United threw everything but the kitchen sink at Tuggeranong's goal. How they missed, I don't know. But no one could begrudge the result to Tuggeranong. Wonderful game. Then, of course, we had the Premier League game. Canberra City v Belconnen United. Now, I think in our hearts, most of us expected Belconnen to canter through to the grand final. Well, Canberra City had other plans. Both teams went for the result with a will. Again, it was end-to-end stuff. Canberra City scored first and looked set to take the game at 1-0. This was not the way most people thought it would go. A very late equaliser took the game into extra time, and until the last minute, it seemed as if it would go down to a penalty shootout before two more goals took the score line to 2-2, with 1 minute to play. Both coaches had used their subs, and Belco had got down to 10 players due to injury. Then it happened. Another late goal to Belconnen United, and game over. Canberra City can deservedly feel they seriously troubled Belconnen and came within a whisker of playing the grand final. Canberra City have had a terrific season. Good luck to Belconnen. I have left the Premier League under-18 game to last in this summary because it was a game that promised so much and gave so little pleasure. Woden Valley v Tuggeranong. Two teams different in style and temperament inclined me to the view that this would be an absolute cracker. I was wrong. Worse, I was embarrassed and disappointed, as were many others. Woden went out to what should have been an unassailable 3-0 lead. Tuggeranong were not playing to form, and Woden, though in the lead, were still well short of their best form. Late in the second half, Tuggies lifted and got a goal back. Things changed dramatically. Tuggies lifted their intensity and the physicality of the game, and Woden struggled to hold them out. A second goal beckoned, and it came to Tuggeranong. Suddenly it was 3-2 and everything to play for. At this point, a Tuggeranong player shoulder-charged a Woden player off the ball. and flattened him. The crowd howled, and Tuggy's spectators groaned at what they thought was likely to be a red card. In the event, no card was given and a free kick to Woden, while the player on the deck struggled to get back into position. That was the moment things really did change. Tuggies pressed hard, and the game was in the balance. The fouls increased. Neither coach seemed to have much influence over things. Snap. There was a confrontation between two players directly in front of the Woden bench, and to the absolute astonishment and dismay of the spectators and parents and players, a Woden player, who was not going to be subbed on that game anyway, decided to enter the game in a spectacularly stupid fashion. He launched himself from the bench and attacked a Tuggeranong player on the field. We are now operating so far outside the rules of the game, it just is not funny. The Tuggies player, who had offended earlier, took his cue and also displayed the same sort of thick-headed, selfish judgment as the Woden player and ran in from some distance to get a piece of the action. The second man in does it every time. You guessed it, mayhem in a flash. Or an all-in brawl, a melee. Most players simply tried to settle things down, although drawn to the centre of this nonsense, and very few punches were actually thrown, but it sure looked bad and could have been so much worse. Coaching staff became involved, with the Woden coach last seen manhandling the errant Tuggeranong player away from the scene of the melee. Not good. I have to say it's as well to remind ourselves that many of these young players are still, in inverted commas, minors. That affects what you do. When the dust settled, the ref yellow carded the Woden and Tuggeranong players. Yellow card? This time around, no one could believe they didn't get a red card each. The Tuggeranong player continued the game, and the Woden player, to my absolute amazement, was left on the bench. It was a disappointing game on several fronts. Simply not good enough at Premier League level. Now, let's talk about the men's Premier League grand finals coming up this Sunday. In the Premier League 16s, we have the Academy v Belconnen United. That commences at 12 p.m. The Premier League 18s is Belconnen United v Woden Valley at 2 p.m. The Premier League Pathways is Canberra FC v Tuggeranong United at 4 p.m. And the Premier League game itself is Canberra FC v Belconnen United commencing at 6 p.m. All games are at McKellar. Now, let's talk about the Women's Premier League. Last round was last Sunday. Western Creek 0, ANU 0, Woden Valley 7, Canberra FC 0. So Woden Valley has dragged itself well and truly back up into the winner's circle. Belconnen United 0, Bellwest Foxes 1. No one was really playing for anything in that last round other than a few points. The positions on the ladder in the minor premiership had been decided the week before. So let's get down to the real business. The Women's Premier League finals commence this Sunday, and they will be held at the University of Canberra Fields. Two games in question are Western Creek v Woden Valley at University of Canberra 4 at 1 p.m. And the second game is Belconnen United v Bellwest Foxes, University of Canberra 2, also at 1 p.m. If you're not going to McKellar, University of Canberra Fields is the place to go to.
We're talking to George Hoyker, Director of Co-Curricular at Radford. George has been here 20 years. He's in an absolutely unique position to view young Australians, male and female. This is a co-educational school, football players of both genders. George is a teacher, football player, coach, mentor, actor, poet, writer, written two pretty good books on junior football. Certainly second is one that ought to be mandatory reading of any coach who dares to get into coaching junior football. But most importantly, let me emphasise, George is in a position to offer comment, informed comment, on the development of the human being here at the school and the integration and use of football in that process. Thanks, George.
thanks, Pete. It's good to be here.
Junior football's our subject. Let's say ages 10 to 18. General observations on junior football here at Radford, if you like.
I'll talk more generally, I think.
Okay, good.
It's probably a good place to start. I think junior football's obviously growing quite exponentially, and I think with the World Cup successes that are occurring at the moment happening, I think that the game game will just become increasingly popular. And I think my feeling is with that, there's coming a little bit of baggage that I'm worried that some people are missing. That is that I think we need to remember that for the majority of people that are playing, sport is a pastime. It's an aspect of life and not an all-consuming, would you say almost religion, for a kid that's playing it. And I often think that we make decisions based on, I think the phrase that I've heard you use, Peter, is kids that are at the actual top of a pyramid, whereas where the reality is that 99.78% of the kids that are playing are actually just playing for fun and for enjoyment and don't need, I think, to have a lot of the weight of expectations from both parents, coaches, and even themselves thrust upon them all the time as they're just living life. And I'm worried that junior sport has become another serious thing that's sort of like constipating a kid's living and lifestyle. I'm worried that that's the trend and that's where things are going.
Can I quote you back from your excellent book, How to Succeed Without Really Winning? Having experienced that one, I can relate to it. Chapter 5, The Art of Sporting, His Holiness Hoyker's 17.5 Steps Towards Contentment and Fulfillment on Match Days. Must be awful being quoted back, mate. This is a good one. Remember to stay happy. Sport has enough constipation associated with it as it is. It need not be about life and death. Sort those issues out away from the sports field. If you don't enjoy it, it's hardly recreation. You said it right.
Oh, thanks. I can't believe hearing that. Again, I think that issue is probably timeless. I would challenge anybody that sort of like would think that what I'm saying is possibly a fallacy to just go out to junior sport on the weekend and have a look. And it wouldn't matter, I think. It doesn't matter what the code is. It doesn't matter what the nature of the sport is, or, you know, whether it's an individual sport or a team sport. You'll find that a lot of that attitude is prevalent.
Football is one activity in the co-curricular program here in Radford, a rich and diverse program. But it's only one of the things that goes on here, and no more important or less important, I would think, in your eyes than anything else.
Yeah, well, I look at it like a food group. One of the things that I always say is when kids are young, it should be a smorgasbord. You should be eating from all of the food groups. If you eat from any one and you eat too much of that, I figure it does bad things to you. My experience over the years of working at the elite and club and school level has been that more often than not, I think it's better to sample life and choose life. We're wanting to specialise our children far too early when we as adults never did that or were forced to.
Yeah.
If you wanted to look at it alternatively. And I'll stand in front of a herd of buffalo and say that I believe that that's not the best thing to do when you're looking at, you know, producing a kid that's had rich experience, diverse experience and learnt a lot.
There really is a difference between football offered through the school and the club.
I enter that sort of conversation cautiously. I think that when kids play whatever sport they're playing, and we're not just talking about football here at the school level, there's a lot of goodness that comes with that, because the people that they're growing up with in the immediate environment are the people that they're sharing their experiences with through sport. But that's not to say if you're outside of the school environment that those experiences will happen. They'll just happen with different people. So it comes down to a choice that I think a parent really has to make, although some parents leave it to their children to make, is how closed do you want your child's world to be? And when they do everything and express themselves through a school context, they definitely have a rich and holistic experience.
Yep.
But I wouldn't want to go down as saying that therefore school sport is the be-all and end-all, because that wouldn't be fair. It's also, I think, muddying the issue. It comes down to choice, and unfortunately a lot of people involved with junior sport, from my experience, don't know the definition of that word. All the choices. Well, they'll make all the choices, including coaching ones for their children. They'll tell them what they need to eat, what they need to drink, how they need to train, how much of their life they have to give up. You get kids that are coming out of these programs that don't know how to make a single decision about anything that they're doing because they're so used to being force-fed. And also, I question, because I know that it's happening within football, I question these programs where kids are training 5 days a week after school. When do they meet their friends? When do they tackle their homework fresh? When do they go out with boys and girls at their own age?
Yeah.
When do they get to be a kid? And I like using the term constipation because I think that's what it actually does. It hardens them up into this certain sort of like playing machine. And I think that's why my initial comments were about, you know, like I worry that I could go to a Division 3 match and see the parents on the sideline behaving in exactly the same way as they are in a Division 1 match. Mm-hmm. That used to be where you could be free, make mistakes and not give a hang, you know. And
not anymore.
And I'm worried that that's not happening.
We're right to the meat of this issue about junior football. When you look at the young players that you've seen come through, what are you expecting to see happening within the junior players? The technical and tactical differences, what progression are you expecting to see as they move through their age groups?
Well, I'm one of those people that believes that you got to put your best coaches on at the younger age groups.
Yep.
Because I think that if they have a really, really productive start, even if it's not totally technically correct, the kids will be in the correct mindset to go through their footballing careers and make the adjustments that they have to. There are so many players that, like, you see it at the rep level when you take on kids at the 14 and 15 age group. There are so many players and parents that are wanting to blame their coach at under 10 or 11 for not. Poor guy's probably just come off the street and decided to do something for community service and hasn't taught them the correct thing. If when they're young, they're started with some good solid basics, and there's things that you can, you know, there's plenty of literature and multimedia out there that can assist people with that sort of stuff, and that's coupled with a healthy mental attitude to sport, I think that any kid's going to be right. A lot of the professional footballers, particularly the ones that are in the current Australian team, are actually late bloomers.
Yeah,
they're players that, you know, weren't world beaters when they were young. And I know Schwarzer, for example, is a very, very good example. Mm. We're talking about a person with almost perfect technique as far as goalkeepers go. Mm. But he didn't have that when he was younger.
That age group, 8 to 12, the Japanese are now calling the golden years. That's guiding their thinking. To anyone dealing in education, and certainly to parents, if they take the time to think about it, the more done well early, the better the outcome will
be. I agree, but once again, not wishing to sound like I'm sort of like hedging my bets all the time, it's that you've got to be really careful about generalisations because kids develop at different rates.
That's true.
Develop mentally and physically at different rates, and then you've got the gender issues as well. You know, the girls are racing forward then slow down, the guys get a chance to catch up. And I tend to think with junior kids and sport, and I probably think this about in terms of education as well, is be wary about the gurus that sit on the hill and give you these notions of what is right. You've got to take things on a sort of like a personal level with children, and what can work in the context of this child in this club or school could be totally different.
You see that in football teams, probably most specifically at schools, because you tend to get the same group all the time. So you deal with them at 10, and they come to the first training at 11, and they're all different.
Mm, exactly.
You touched on throwing your best coaches in early. Real good one. Let me quote you again. I don't know which of the 17.5 pointers your holiness, but here we go, about coaches. Remember that the messages you provide throughout a junior player's sporting life can govern, influence, and change the sort of player and person they become. Set a good example so that when a youngster develops grey matter, they will remember you fondly. I have some sympathy for that.
We've probably all been there, haven't we?
Haven't we? But it's true. You really do have to have good coaches. Someone has to put the effort into getting good coaches.
But we're getting less and less people wanting to do it because of, you know, the attitudes that are coming. And it's largely parental on the sidelines.
Yeah. Well, how do you tackle that here at Radford?
We actually have a code of conduct, sports policy, which we ask our parents to sign. Whenever that's, what would you say, creatively reinterpreted, we help realign people and say, like, if you want to come and watch your kid, we've got certain rules here. But that once things have been outlined and people are aware of the parameters with respect to things like behaviour, it really is only a few that then step over the line. But you've got to be brave enough to take them on.
Yeah, you do.
You know, when we talk about good sports policy and all that, most people are unafraid to take on these people because they think, oh, you know, it's going to, all that anger and stuff is going to get turned on them. But can I just encourage people to take on the bullies? I mean, because that's all they are. Okay. They're little on the inside, and they need to be reminded about that.
we're right on the hot topic. I reckon at some point in every junior coaching, there will be a subheading, even a chapter on managing parents, which in itself is interesting. Again, let me quote you. And this is about parents. Real good advice to parents. Remember that if you have a son on a team, daughter as well, you will lose a certain amount of objectivity and perspective when coming to terms with success or lack of it. Well, that's just got to be true. That's your experience, obviously.
Well, yeah, very much so. You do lose a sense of what's important and what's not. And the kids aren't really able to engage in any meaningful discussion about their feelings about you.
Because often parents do get entangled in coaching because they end up taking on the coach's job because no one else will do it.
Do it.
Pressure there, isn't there?
When there's no one else but you, good for you. The fact that you've probably made that choice means that you deserve a grace. What I find is that if you have to deal with people that are being overly critical about you in that context, have with you coaching forms and referee forms. When I'm walking around on the sidelines, I always have them with me, and you can really, really stop somebody hacking into a ref, for example, by giving them referee forms and asking them to complete a course and give up their Saturdays on a week-in basis and doing it. And it's the same with the coaches. The second you get a coach's criticism, just be humble about it. You just say, yeah, you're probably right, I do have deficiencies in that area. Here, do a level one course, go and find out about my deficiencies and then help me through them.
Give me some clues.
Yeah, and by the way, come twice a week to trainings and the games.
Yes.
and make some sacrifices before you open your big fat mouth.
Oh, George, winning and losing. It's definitional. When someone wins, someone loses.
Oh, yeah.
Easy to say. I'll quote you again. Remember to look behind the result. There is always something immensely valuable to be gained from even the smallest or hugest loss. You'll generally learn more from your losses than you do from your wins. Loss is a wonderful mechanism for keeping us all honest as well. Loss and coping with it is an integral part of the game and of life. Isn't that true?
Oh, I stay by that. Boy, I wrote that so long ago, it doesn't sound like me anymore. That sums it entirely up. My happiest experiences have been with my losing team. My most intense ones, and we're talking about decades of coaching, my most intense ones have been with the ones that have won. I had a side that didn't lose in 3 years at one stage here. That was the most stressful 3 years of my coaching career.
What does a coach do when they have a junior team and you're getting pounced on every week? Some games, good, it's close loss. Other games, you might be getting flogged.
Well, the first thing is you have to shrug off that devil on your shoulder that's saying it's your fault and say to yourself, get past this. It's not about you. It's about what's happening around you. And you can do everything. There's people available to look at, firstly, the practices and the things that you're doing. Probably if your team is consistently losing, particularly if they're young, you have to make sure that doesn't muddy up their enthusiasm. Kids are a lot more resilient than you actually think.
Yes.
They'll give you the, oh, God, I'm sick of this, I'm losing all the time. But there's a little side of them that's still being there for their friends and playing, and that's enough to work on. But you can't get disenchanted. You have to, you're the adult there, for God's sakes. You have to get over that. You have to create fun in the environment, because I wonder if unsuccessful teams actually forget that.
Yes.
Once again, they you muddy yourself and constipate yourself so much with losing and its associated demons that you actually don't realise that it's taking a lot of pressure off and allowing you to actually do things, experiment with things. But looking for improvement's that hard, but I guess this is the point where the coach does actually have to make an effort, and that's hard when you're the dad that's volunteered that works, you know, really long hours, or mum, of course, in the same context. You might have to do a bit of work. You might have to read up on, you know, this works, this doesn't, and be prepared to try some things out. I can guarantee any coach that's feeling that way that the effort that they spend on those sort of things will be rewarded irrespective of what your results are. I had a team once that was losing by double figure digits all the time, and I told them that we'll go to McDonald's every time they lose by less than 10. Okay, and what happens then is every time we lost, we had redefined what a loss meant.
Yeah.
And we were actually winning when we were losing 6 or 7 nil. And that particular team were enjoying themselves by the end of the season. This is what I was saying about before, so much so that the actual results were getting down to the 2s and 3s. And they, you know, really, when the results were there, we thought we were winning, which which in many ways we were. The team was improving and hadn't realised it. Parenting's a hard job because the kids take out everything on you, okay? Yeah. And it can be really, really hard for a parent to deal with a kid that's despondent because of loss. But I often find that what you've got to do with kids is you've got to help them see that the world is bigger than they think. Normally when kids are really, really upset about stuff, it's because they can't break out of a very narrow vision of the world and themselves. And you have to help them see that this rolling soccer ball is not comparable to what's happening in the Middle East. It's not comparable to even things on a local level, you know. It's not loss in any profound sense, and you have to help them redefine that.
Yeah, very important.
You're listening to 2XX Near Post Local, and we're speaking to George Hoitker, Director of Co-Curricular at Radford, on junior football.
The next issue I want to touch on in junior football is the old chestnut of disciplinary problems. Now, of course, that has one meaning at a club level, but it has a more profound meaning at a school-based team. So if a player has a problem, he may well be pulled up in the game. Capital Football may or may not deal with the issue. That's a football system response. How do you deal with discipline issues or inappropriate behaviour at a school level? Because you can bring another regime to this.
I don't think how we deal with it with the school would be different than if we were at the club level. You get a yellow card, you get the suspension, or whatever, a red card, yeah, you know, whatever, yeah, whatever it is, whatever the rules are. But I don't think that's enough. And I really like the idea of community service, which when you think about it is paralleled in our judicial system. Like if you're a criminal and you've done something wrong, community service is often considered to be I don't know if the word is punishment, but it's something that, you know, someone has to do in order to improve. So I like to get kids that have digressed to help out with coaching to work in the canteen, your club canteen.
Oh, yeah.
Or depending on the nature of the kid, they could even do something simple like assist with the ground preparation, putting up the nets and all of that sort of stuff. And what you find is that they have then put back into the sport in the area that they've transgressed in a fairly meaningful way. But let's say a kid's given an umpire, you know, a really, really hard time. I still think the best way to sort of like solve that problem is to ask them to do a referee's course or get them to referee a game in the middle just to see how hard it is so they can get their perspective and larger pictures.
That's a good one. For those that have been talented that have come through your school here, has the school been able to add anything to the mixture other than the many things that are associated with their education and personal development?
Oh, yes. We are very proud of them. We are very, very supportive to the best that we can because we're an educational institution. It's the atmosphere that we've provided here and the fact that the kids have probably started with us. So even at that level, they obviously can't play with us anymore. I like to encourage them to be around, to help with the coaching, to talk to a player, give advice. When they're put in that position, I think it brings something really, really beautiful out in them, you know, to just step away from the player and to become the coach or the... is I think, one of the best things for a young elite sportsman to do. I would recommend that all programs do that as an essential component for their elite young sportsmen, is get them to think in terms of community and not themselves, because it just becomes you, and everything. You know, it's very easy to become self-obsessed because it's all about your body, your legs, your game, your this.
Yes.
I think it's important to think outside of it, and I think coaching, there is nothing else in the world that makes you think outside of yourself a hell of a lot more than coaching can. Well,
the other thing I would think that these young players, it comes from a school environment here and they're stepping up, it's easy for people to miss the fact that they really do crave their peer group support.
Yeah, I think friendships are a very important thing. That's why I'm very, very hesitant to remove kids from it unless there's a very, very good reason.
Yep.
Playing sport with your mates, surely there's nothing better.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's something that schools bring to the mix that clubs don't immediately have from one season to another. The friendship groups they form, it's lifelong stuff.
Yep.
Can you give us one piece of advice to parents with a young, talented, in inverted commas, player? What would be that little bit of advice?
Remember, it's your son or daughter, and it's not your son and daughter. You know, they are a human being that has their own dreams and their own lives and ambitions and desires, and make sure that they can continue to live. You know, this thing that they're choosing to do is stopping that and corroding the soul and corroding the person that they really, really should be, then bud out. Yet why do we do it for sport? Because we're living vicariously through our kids and we want for them an unattainable success and future at the expense of a soul.
Love and desire drives us pretty hard, doesn't it?
And sometimes in the down incorrect avenues.
Yeah, that's a good note to close on. Thanks very much, George.
Thank you.
Well, we're right at the final, so coaches, of course, are thinking about the tactical aspects of this. They'll have met the teams they're playing twice before and tweaking the solutions they reckon are best suited to their opponents. Well, short of Churchillian speeches, this one from Ricky Tomlinson, I think, sums up how most players generally feel about tactical and motivational speeches before big games.
Branco, a Brazilian who was an expensive flop at Middlesbrough, amazed his teammates before one league match when he stood up in the dressing room and delivered the following tactical talk as he mimed kicking the ball. Pass, 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 goal! Lager, 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 nightclub.
If you're going to the near post this week, you really do have to be quick, because I'm already heading there. Catch you next week. Enjoy your football.